Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Now. Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us on Night Call. Joining me, Jalene Jordan. Hi, Jalene.
Hello, Peter.
You know, it just occurred to me, we began doing our nationally syndicated show in October of 2000. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a month later, there was the election stolen by George Bush.
Oh, yeah.
And he was inaugurated January 20th, 2001. Suddenly, that seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
It does.
And remember what we were doing? January 20th, America Held Hostage, Day 1.
That's right. All the memories.
It's been so long. Oh, Nancy Pelosi, not one of my faves particularly, but she said it's like a 20-pound anvil has been lifted off our neck.
You can say that again. I mean, I just feel a whole lot better, and I really did this kind of deep, you know, looking into things, and I really believe that this last 8 years really stressed us out more than we even know.
I know.
We were in a state of just stress constantly with this guy in the White House.
And these criminals that surrounded him. And
Absolutely. These
lies. You know, no one believed it, including my own wife, and you didn't. I said I would actually quit if John McCain and Sarah Palin would have been elected. I said I could not bear another 4 years or 8 years on the air talking about all the lies, the mismanagement, the right-wing creatures from the Black Lagoon that they pull out from under these rocks. Or is that mixing a metaphor too much? A creature from the Black Lagoon pulled out from under a rock. Huh? I don't know. Whatever.
Works for me.
So, so far, so good. I don't trust any politician.
Of course, I don't either. But I'll tell you what. I mean, some of the things that he's done.
So far, so good.
In 5 days, six days, basically. And, you know, we can get into those during the show, I'm sure.
Yeah. Did anyone go to the inauguration that's listening? 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743. Open lines.
Yes. I'm sure glad I didn't go. I mean, now that I look at it. I saw it a lot on television.
It was cold. It was very crowded.
Yeah.
But, you know, it would have been, I mean, I have to say, I agree with the crowd thing and all of that, but it would have been pretty amazing to be right there.
No, I know.
You know, I mean, anytime I've gathered en masse in Washington, D.C., well, usually it's been
about 100,000.
Yeah. Well, I've been at a march of closer to 1 million when I went to the March for Women's Lives 1 year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah.
But, you know, so the energy, even when we were all mad, you know, can you imagine all of that energy?
And joyous.
And, you know, double that crowd and joyous energy. I think maybe it would have been a little cold, though.
People got there. Well, we've both, me in 2001 and you in 2005, were at anti-Bush inaugural protests, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
the counter-inaugural.
And it was 2001. It was
cold.
It was cold. It was...
I was living in Miami in 2005 when I went, so I was really cold.
Yeah. Well, the crowd from the joyous crowd reminded me of something very specific that happened like 20 days before that.
What's that?
New Year's Eve in Times Square.
Oh, yeah.
It looked exactly like that. Everyone packed in. Some people had been there since 3 a.m.
I know.
And, you know,
people are hardcore.
Some people that had tickets couldn't even get near it.
Yeah, it's always that way.
I saw the concert on HBO.
Oh, yeah.
So that was good.
Yeah, I missed the concert, but I'm sure it'll be available in some form.
Yeah.
It's probably all over YouTube.
But,
you know, those crowds in D.C., the thing is also, Peter, is that the cops all of a sudden get it in their heads whenever it is that it's time to block them off. And they just, they pick a random time, whatever it is that makes them make that decision. And everyone is directed in a direction. It's like cattle, and they will not let you move. I remember this one poor old lady.
This was when, though?
This was in 2005.
Okay.
And this poor lady wanted to just get over to where the she could get on the metro and get out of there. And she was having a hard time walking. She didn't have the strength to do this whole thing again, like the march that we did, to go back all the way. And they would not let her through.
Well, this time, of course, there were 42,000 troops and National Guard and police. And yet, at least, I don't know, I wasn't there. Again, if anyone was there, I'd like to hear your experiences. 313-298-WRIF. And when every time I've been there, it was like an armed camp with with this. It looks both in dress, full battle dress.
Scary.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely no need for
that. Yeah. And guess the best news out of all of it? Not one arrest.
Yeah, and no, and the police weren't like that.
Amazing,
yeah.
Right?
They weren't robocops. They weren't. They didn't see the American people as their enemy.
Wow.
The way they were told to by the Bush administration. The Detroit Free Press today, the editorial says Obama starts cleanup. The new president gets right to work scrubbing out an 8-year accumulation of bad policies.
Ugh.
And they're not just bad, folks. They were illegal. They were done at the behest of corporations. They were done by people in many ways who I think are just totally mad that they created policies that had no sense for anyone. In fact, their short-run policies are partly what has led us to the financial abyss that we're facing now.
Absolutely. And the biggest one being Iraq.
Yeah,
and that
sure
has drained this country.
And the fact that we're going to try to deal with this financial crisis with a stimulus package and continue to fight a war in Iraq, to continue to fight a war in Afghanistan, to have a $1 trillion military budget, it just won't work. Actually, we yak and yak for a while, but since we have, if I can make this little mouse work, we can get Rob right on the air because he was at the inauguration. Rob, hi, it's Peter and Jalene. Thanks for joining us on WRIF. You're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hi, Rob.
Hi. No, Tuesday was amazing. It, just being in the middle of all the people, it's, if you weren't down there, if you're watching it on TV, you really couldn't catch the scope. I was in the middle of it, and it was just great.
It's true. You can't see. It doesn't look at all the same on TV as it is. The energy is what it's about, right?
Oh, yeah.
How did you get there? Give us a little.
The best thing was when Bush came on the steps, the booing, that was just great.
I was wondering how big the booing was.
Oh, it was. I was in the middle. I was right outside the Smithsonian. Mm-hmm. Like I was about probably almost a mile back from the Capitol. And, man, it was just like a rumble of boos. It was kind of funny.
And everybody, when the helicopter took off, everyone was going, hey, hey.
Yeah, hey, no, exactly.
Bye, bye, goodbye. Yeah.
And they were waving at him.
Yeah, I mean, getting out of there was like a bad zombie movie, though.
Really? Like what?
Because all the streets are blocked off, and there's a bunch of cops around. Everyone just kind of didn't know where to go.
Yeah, and there's a lot of confusion, usually.
Yeah, Rob, how did you get there?
Well, I drove from Ypsilanti on Sunday night. We stayed in Virginia. And then on Tuesday morning, we took the metro train into D.C.
Really? So that could be done, huh?
That's usually what I do, Peter.
It was the only way to get in there. Apparently, there was only one road here.
No, I was afraid. In fact, I saw some images on television that there was like 1,000 people just lined up to get into the metro station, not even in the station.
Yeah.
It was more than just 1,000. Let me tell you, we actually walked to Maryland to get on the train to go back.
That's not that far, but
we walked probably about 3.5-4 miles.
Yeah, no, that is far. Virginia isn't far, but Maryland is a little bit of a walk.
Well, because every metro station in D.C. after the inauguration was more than 1,000. I mean, we were in a human traffic jam of just, but no one was really like freaking out or angry. Everyone was just kind of calm and silent waiting in line, so it wasn't a big deal.
It was worth it, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, I never want to do it again.
All right, Rob, thanks for the report.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Well, now, as soon as I hear that, I think, maybe I should have gone.
I know.
Yeah. But I'm pretty claustrophobic. I always say in a crowd like that, if the Beatles came back with John and George, I couldn't handle a crowd like that.
Try being 5'2".
But you got eyes of blue.
Right, that's true.
Right. You know, maybe we should accentuate the positive, but you know what it would have been like other than the utter disgust on the part of people like us. If McCain and Palin had won, it would have been like, did you catch this thing with Bush when this big crowd that welcomed him when he came back to Texas?
Yeah, I did.
22,000 people. You wonder, where is this 22%?
Of Bush supporters?
Yeah.
They were right there.
They're right there. How about this?
Did you see the signs they were holding?
I don't remember what they were, though. Some of them, maybe it says it in here. After, this is from the Associated Press. After an enthusiastic welcome from thousands of cheering Texans in two cities, George W. Bush spent his first night out of office at his Crawford Ranch. And he says, I come home with my head held high.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I look in the mirror and I'm proud. I'm proud of what I see.
You know, I really thought about that statement. And usually if someone has to say it like that, that means they're trying to convince themselves as well.
Yeah. Some of the signs read, be bold, be Bush. Be bold, be Bush.
And 43 is back. Yeah. You know, who wants that? I would burn that thing.
Here's also what he said. Think of the social and human and financial carnage that he presided over. And here's what he said. The presidency was a joyful experience. But as great as it was, nothing compares with Texas at sunset.
No, whatever.
Tonight I have the privilege of saying six words that I've been waiting to say for a long time. It's good to be home.
It is good to be home. Fortunately, he could count.
On Letterman had the best of his.
Which could have
gone, and he said in something about and here's four words and you know in the back it said five. You know, yeah.
They need to put that out on DVD.
But there was another one too. He said, you know, the left hand knows what the left hand knows what the right hand's doing, and he had the wrong hands. Dudley Wynn, a cotton farmer on the South Plains of West Texas, drove 2 hours from Lubbock to greet Bush on his first stop after leaving office. Wynn said, special day, but it's a sad day. He's done 8 years of a job well done. He held our country together with the values we respect.
Wow.
He did the job we asked him to do. He kept our values safe. Who are these people? With Bush at the Midland rally, that's Midland, Texas, where Karl Rove, who should be in jail, former White House Chief of Staff Josh Bolten, Alberto Gonzalez, who broke so many laws, lied before Congress, and it was the country's former attorney general, Bush plans to eventually settle in a North Dallas neighborhood.
He's not going to stay in Crawford?
No.
I wonder why.
I don't know. Too small. Huh. Yeah. The only network to cover his arrival there was Fox News. Who else?
They acted like it was the only story going on.
Sure. And the only entertainment was country music.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's what we would have had if McCain and Palin would have won the election. It would have been all white and country music.
The inauguration. It would have been horrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrible. I don't know if I would have been inconsolable.
I wouldn't be here. I'm telling you. I wouldn't do this anymore. For one thing, if the American people could have been that abysmally stupid or racist, well, they weren't. I mean, I really genuinely believe that the Republicans stole 2004 and 2000. The American people have an unbroken string of rejecting Reaganomics, essentially, because that's what sunk us ultimately. And fortunately, the myth of Reagan is beginning to fray as well, which is good. I don't know what is going to happen with the stimulus spending that Barack Obama is proposing to get this all going again. Because on one hand, the stimulus spending is really the way to go. Spending is the way to go. You give it to Detroit, it's immediately spent. You give it to the state of Michigan, it's immediately spent. Tax cuts, whereas I would say people under $50,000 a year definitely should get a tax cut. The people way over $1 million, they ought to get a steep tax increase. And certainly these multimillionaires who, what's that guy's name, Boehner or Boehner? Boehner, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Let's call him Boehner.
B-O-E-H-N-E-R.
Yeah, Boehner. What's his first name? He's the minority leader in the House. Yeah, well, we call him Boehner. In any event, their whole deal is keep the tax cuts for the wealthy. I mean, that's all they're about.
Yes.
So they're talking about everything, nationalizing banks, creating these banks that would be these special shelters for bad loans. I mean, we're in a real pickle people.
Mm-hmm.
And can Barack Obama do it? Well, as long as we're only saying his name, maybe there is less of a chance. Obama moved to reshape U.S. policy by closing Guantanamo. That's something that McCain advocated as well, and the Bush administration itself. So they're trying to, you know, what the Republicans are trying to do is set up a scenario where if there is any recidivism, any repeat activity on the part of anyone released from Guantanamo, that will be the responsibility of the Obama administration. Although these guys that were released from Guantanamo by George W. Bush's administration that have gone back and committed terrorist acts.
They're part of, two of them have appeared in an Al-Qaeda video.
Right.
And they're Saudis, looks like.
Yeah, our buddies.
Yeah. Once again, our buddies who are the ones who...
Those damn Iraqis.
The Twin Towers down.
That's right. It was the Saudis. I keep forgetting.
Wrong country.
Yeah, right. Obama reverses Bush abortion funds policy, which is very good, although this in many ways is symbolic. Because I mean, it affects people. I don't mean to say that. But the ban, it says here in Associated Press, has been a political football since Democratic and Republican administrations have, every time they get in office, like Reagan had first adopted it. A ban, here's essentially what it does. That it bans U.S. taxpayer money, usually in the form of Agency for International Development funds, from going to international family planning groups. And all of them either offer abortions directly or provide information, counseling, or referrals about abortion as one family planning method.
Mm-hmm.
Method.
Well, one of many.
Yeah.
It also meant they couldn't get birth control anymore.
Right. To appease this far right-wing minority in the United States, and of course this is the base of the Republican Party, they would overturn this ban. Well, Clinton ended the ban in 1993, and then Bush reinstituted it in 2001 as one of his first acts. In fact, I think it might have been his first. And what's his name? Obama. Thank you.
Yes. Barack.
Barack Obama.
Obama. Yeah. President Obama.
President Obama. Yeah.
That's one of the first things he did was just reverse this back. I guess it goes back. It's been going back and forth since Reagan.
Sure. Essentially, the rule unfairly discriminates against poor people in the world, and it denies U.S. aid to groups that may be involved in abortion, but also works on other aspects of reproductive health care and HIV/AIDS work, leading to the closure of free and low-cost rural clinics. So this is the result of these people.
It's resulting in more women dying.
Yeah. A senior Vatican official on Saturday attacked U.S. President Barack Obama for arrogance for overturning a ban on state funding.
Okay, duh. He's going to do it. You know, I mean, really.
I think it's arrogant for some foreign religious figure to comment on that.
I do, too. And I was really happy about this. I was thrilled about this. I mean, almost more than anything that Obama has done thus far, this is the one that I'm, of course, most passionate about. I remember when Bush did that. It was one of the first things he did, right? Just like Obama reversed it, one of the first things he did. I guess that's pretty standard.
As usual, on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, which was the hallmark judicial decision that said, guess what? That things like abortion are a privacy matter between a woman and her doctor. Tens of thousands, and we usually hate when it says it. I think there, actually, I don't know how many people were out there. Oftentimes, there's like 100,000 or so.
Oh, yeah, who, on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, go to the White House, right?
Yeah.
With their signs or whatever, and Bush would go out and greet them and make a statement.
Sure.
An official statement.
Well, so it says tens of thousands of abortion opponents rallied Thursday on the National Mall to mark the 36th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, when it said that male legislators could no longer pass laws that were enforced by mostly male police on women's reproductive rights. And I think most male police and female police don't want any part of that anyway, so I'm not trying to criticize them. They have to enforce laws, but that's not a law anymore. And it, you know, when these people talk about getting the government off your back, here, this is a thing where they want to get in. What are they saying? What are some of those slogans from Get Your Laws Off My Womb, I think? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's,
is that one of them? Or did, just
a,
make,
well,
did I make that
no,
up? Just
no, remember?
Spot?
No, this is what it is. Good memory, but it's not the right words. That was the sign I carried in D.C.
Oh.
It said, U.S. out of my uterus. Big giant sign.
Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan at 313-298-WRIF. Open lines for you. And, I mean, I thought it was, you know, I know some people. I know some, like, liberal Catholics that ethically oppose abortion.
Yes.
And also
I do
some
too.
Protestant groups. Mm-hmm. They do not want the law to enforce their religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. And instead, they want to create a social atmosphere where every child is wanted, which means getting rid of poverty, which means making birth control available,
right.
Something that these right-wingers have no interest in whatsoever. And like I say, all of these people aren't right-wingers, but mostly the people I know, the Catholics and these Protestants that are against abortion, they're part of what's called, what is it, the seamless garment. So they're against capital punishment, they're against war, and they're against abortion.
Mm-hmm.
You usually don't find this kind of coherent mix, particularly with the people that are at the rabid core of this compulsory pregnancy movement. And it is compulsory pregnancy when you think about the Hyde Amendment, which has been almost in force for 30 years. And it essentially denies abortions to poor women. So if you're middle class and you can afford it, or if you have health insurance, you can get an abortion.
Yeah.
If you're a poor woman, you have to have the baby. That's compulsory pregnancy. It's nothing about pro-life. Don't ever use that word. That's a PR term that these people made up. So thank you, Barack Obama.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. There's going to be, Obama made a promise indicating support for the Freedom of Choice Act, which would overrule many state-level restrictions on access to abortion. Now, that'd be an interesting court case because, federal law, state law, when they conflict and all of that. But the other thing I was saying, the people I know who are anti-abortion but do not want it made against the law, they're mostly involved in social and economic justice issues and peace activity. That why this is inflated to this movement that is the center of people's political life is way beyond me.
Yeah,
there's a lot more pressing issues. I don't know if you saw or others of you saw this online. Videographer? Yeah, videographer, guy with a camera, went to this demonstration in Washington and said to all these demonstrators, do you think abortion should be legal or illegal? And they, of course, all said illegal. And then he said to them, what do you think should happen to a woman that if it's made illegal? Seemed absolutely to the person, each one of them said, I never really thought about that. And he said, well, do you think they should be sent to jail? And 90% of them said,
no.
And he would respond by saying, well, this is the only crime in the world where there's no punishment for breaking a law. I mean, maybe he didn't follow up. They probably would have said, do you think the doctor that performs it should be jailed?
Yeah.
And when it was against I'm almost positive that previous to Roe v. Wade, that it was not that a woman did not suffer any penalties, but rather the doctor would, an abortionist, as they would call him, rather than a physician. And I think maybe the penalty was 20 years in jail.
So
that's a lot, but it's not like it didn't rise to the level of homicide.
Right.
These people say that abortion is murder.
Of
course they do.
Which
are welcome to their opinion on it,
but I find it highly annoying.
Yeah, they're annoying.
their opinion.
313-298-WRIF. Let's take some more calls. Let me see. Is anybody else here? This is interesting. Here is Laura in Sterling Heights. Everybody's guessing what I'm going to talk about. Go ahead, Laura. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Jalene.
Hi.
Actually, I really am so glad that I got through to you guys. Because I wanted to talk about something really interesting, and I'm not really sure if you're aware of, if you've heard of the Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn's new book, Race, Chorus Against White Supremacy.
Yeah, I have. In fact, I just talked to Ayers on Friday about recording an interview with him and Bernadine Dorn, the co-author, his wife, about the book. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know if you know, but he's going to be speaking tomorrow, Monday, in Ann Arbor.
Well, actually, I just saw him tonight.
Oh.
I just got back, like, around 10 o'clock, and he was actually speaking at the Bog Center with Bernadine Dorn, and I just kind of wanted to get the word out there to other people that might have not heard But just exactly what the book is about, and I mean, I haven't read it yet, but I actually just got the book. But how it just kind of raises the question about participatory education and what is education in democracy, and against white supremacy. And
well, that's the kind of educational work that that Bill has done over the last 30 years. If people aren't remembering, Bill Ayers was McCain and Palin tried to win the election on, since they had no program whatsoever, and they really were the continuation of the Bush regime. So Bill Ayers, A-Y-E-R-S, they tried to connect up Barack Obama with Bill Ayers. They were both from the same Hyde Park neighborhood in Chicago, and as the neighbors, they had rubbed elbows, and Palin particularly tried to say that Obama had palled around with terrorists because Bill Ayers in the 1970s was part of something called the Weather Underground. All of which, if any of you are hearing this for the first time, just Google Weather Underground or Bill Ayers, A-Y-E-R-S. It's all quite a fascinating history, and does not leave, does it, Laura?
No, because, I mean, actually, after meeting him, he's just an amazing person, you can't even believe, the things that they've said about him, and amazing.
Laura, those things are true. The Weather Underground did go on a campaign of bombing and placing bombs in different places to oppose the Vietnam War and to symbolic of different events that was happening in the United States at the time. It was a terrible tactic, and one born out of tremendous frustration and anger, but it's not really the way, it absolutely is not the way to go. And now Bill Ayers, who it's funny, McCain referred to him as a toothless old radical.
What? He really has a good sense of humor about
he does.
That.
He does. And I don't know. You know, if you go to the Detroit Free Press website, I think it's just Freep, FREEP.com, there's an extraordinarily long interview with Bill Ayers by Dawson, what's his last name? It's funny, I can remember his first name. Anyway, one of the Free Press staff people. And then the comments after, and the anger that people have in denouncing Bill Ayers, you would think that all these people were alive when all that was going on, rather than it being 40 something years ago. I mean, it's quite astounding. And one of the things, for we can criticize the Weather Underground for introducing domestic violence, and their idea was bring the war home, is that the United States under Johnson, and then particularly under Nixon, visited so much horrible violence that led to the most catastrophic loss of life of Indochinese, up in the millions, and tens of thousands of Americans. And most people at that time were, except if you're connected to a military person, just went around about their life as if nothing else was happening. Kind of like we are,
like Iraq.
Not quite as the same now, but pretty much as Jillian said, like we are about Iraq. And they wanted to, quote, bring the war home. Not a good idea, and it didn't have anywhere near the results that they thought it should. But the real perpetrators of violence in that era were Nixon and Kissinger, responsible for the deaths of millions of civilians. And the Weather Underground and Bill Ayers are, when it comes to a magnitude of that kind of death, the Weather Underground caused no death whatsoever, although some people disagree with that, they're footnotes of footnotes when it comes to violence in the 1970s, that's for sure. Okay.
The
Boggs Center is a very interesting place as well, named after James Boggs, who was people can Google that as well.
I definitely suggest people to check it out get it down there and kind of get in on some of these conversations, because you just wouldn't believe the amazing ideas that just go through this place.
Sure. And a lot of the ideas of James Boggs are kept alive by his widow, Grace Lee Boggs, who is now in her 90s. sharp as a tack, and writes for the Michigan Citizen very frequently. If you ever see that paper around, pick it up. Laura, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Here's Alyssa in Waterford. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi, how are you guys?
Hi.
Good, how are you?
I'm doing good. I haven't talked to you guys in a while.
Oh, yeah, here you are.
Welcome back.
All right, well, I wanted to make a few comments about, you know, Obama's inauguration ceremony he had.
Sure.
Now, he invited, you know, the general of the anti-gay movement, Rick Warren, and Glenn Robinson, the gay bishop.
Yeah.
But I was watching, if you're familiar with, what is her name? Rachel
Maddow? Rachel Maddow? Yes. Yeah, yeah, on MSNBC.
Yeah, she had an interview and with the bishop, and one of the things she says is that she found it, she was very skeptical at the fact that she believed that his invitation and Rick Warren's invitation was uncoupled. But now, listen to this. I know you're going to want to jump in a few times, but let me tell you this. He said that he feels that LGBT should feel very much comfortable with Obama's new administration.
He said that publicly, that gays, lesbian,
should be uncomfortable?
Would be comfortable?
Oh, comfortable.
Yes, and trust me.
I mean, did he say that publicly as part of his prayer?
I don't know if it was his prayer, but listen to this. You will like this very much. Rachel's response was, she said, one thing that gay activists have thought about since the Rick Warren invitation was, when it was issued, was that when you compare the Obama administration to the experience with the Clinton administration,
mm-hmm.
and as you know, the Clinton administration was throughout through the gays under the bus politically since the Warren invite.
Threw him under the bus.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I did not
enjoy that. I can't believe I didn't turn it off, but I listened to it just to see what he said.
Yeah, this is who led the anti-gay marriage campaign.
Compares it to pedophilia.
Yeah. The other question was, Alyssa, was he going to invoke Jesus to make it specifically a Christian prayer? And I thought, man, the guy is not going to do that.
Right.
Boom, dumped it all in.
He did.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Right, listen, I got to take a break. Thank you so much. 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And we didn't say you can always email us at calltalkyes@yahoo.com if there are not open lines available, which they are right now, or if you're bashful or something like that. Facebook, we're there. MySpace, we're there as well. And we'll be right back.
Greatest country in the world.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this. All right, $9 million.
To all of you who have stuck with me,
divided by 900,000 citizens
through very difficult times.
$10 a head. Now, you're not getting much more out of these guys.
I'm sorry.
Good thing you can still text message us at the RIF. Get your request, content info, and your unfair cellular advantage. Text keyword WRIF to 71913. And,
I'm sorry.
We'll never be embarrassed to hear from you.
I would never quit on you.
Log on to WRIF.com for more details. 101 WRIF.
So blowing up.
The RIF.
Let's get down to some direct talk from DirecTV. At a time when the cost of almost everything around you is spiraling out of control, DirecTV puts you back in control with this amazing offer. Right now, you can get over 150 digital channels of DirecTV for just $29.99 a month for a full year. For a limited time, ask how to get 3 free months of HBO, Stars, and Showtime. That's 28 of the best premium movie channels free for 3 whole months. Lock in your savings by switching to DirecTV. Call 888-359-5566. Call right now to get over 150 digital channels of DirecTV, just $29.99 a month for a full year. Call 888-359-5566. That's 888-359-5566. Offer ends 3309. Subject to credit approval. $23 bill credit requires rebate and enrollment in auto bill pay program. New DirecTV customers only. Lease and credit card require. Other conditions apply. Call for details.
What does 30,000 horsepower sound like? If you like the way that sounds, then you have a passion for speed and power. Turn your passion into a career in the aviation field. All you need are the right skills, and you can get them fast at the Michigan Institute of Aviation and Technology. You can make a great living working on some of the most powerful machines in the world. If you love jets, airplanes, and helicopters, then this is the career for you. Check this out. For the last 4 years, we've had an average of 20 job postings for each graduate. That's 20 jobs for every graduate. There are thousands of jobs available right now with commercial, private, charter, and cargo airlines. Take your earning potential to new heights. Call the Michigan Institute of Aviation and Technology today at 1-800-639-2566. That's 1-800-639-2566. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. Call 1-800-639-2566 to schedule a campus tour or visit www.miat.edu.
All right, let's see what's on my agenda today. I've got lunch with Dave.
Drops.
Then my afternoon business meeting.
Drops.
What about a happy hour?
Drops.
Listen to that little voice inside your head. Trump's is the place for lunch, happy hour, and entertainment that will be appreciated during any business meeting. Every day, their delicious burger and beer lunch is only $9.99. And every day, Trump's has lunch specials for under $10, including ribeye steaks. That's right, lunch for under $10 and Trump's entertainment. Plus, Tuesday is always all-you-can-eat crab legs day. Trump's has Detroit's best happy hour. All beers are just $4.25 and shots for just $3. So schedule your next happy hour meeting at Trump's and see why Trump's was voted Metro Detroit's best VIP room by Maxim Magazine.
Trump's on 8 Mile, just a half mile east of Telegraph. Home of the world's most beautiful women. Preview the fun at Trumps8Mile.com.
What's on your agenda?
Trump's.
On 8 Mile, just east of Telegraph, go to Trumps8Mile.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Now, folks, here's something else I got a problem with. The Ten Commandments, you know? Yeah. Yeah, let me tell you. Listen, here's my problem. Why are there ten? You don't need ten. I think the list of commandments was deliberately and artificially inflated to get it up to ten. It's a padded list. Here's what they did.
All right, we're not going to play the whole thing from George Carlin. Turns out that, big surprise, J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI had a file on George Carlin. Not a very big one, though. Only 12 pages, but nobody likes to have 12 pages of the secret police having a file on you. And he was famous for the seven filthy words that he said you couldn't say on radio or television.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, WBAI, a Pacifica broadcast,
radio station?
Yeah, but it's, I don't know, private, not private. It's, what is it? Listener supported.
Oh,
non-commercial. That's what I'm looking for. They played it on the air, and the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, they lambasted them and said that they can't say it. Went all the way up to the Supreme Court in 1978. The Supreme Court ruling upheld the government's right to determine indecency. But apparently, among the 12 pages in a file recently released by George Carlin's family are a couple of letters from outraged citizens who complained that the comedian had made fun of the FBI and its director, J. Edgar Hoover. Notably,
easy to do.
Yeah, thin-skinned. He did TV appearances in 69 and 70. He was on a Jackie Gleason show and where else? Also, the Carol Burnett show. And at that time, Hoover himself apparently sent a thank you note to people that complained, said, it's always good to know we have the support of such staunch friends as you.
Yeah, go put on your French maid's outfit and talk.
Right.
You know, Carlin,
Go ahead.
Carlin was talking about religion as well. We were talking about Rick Warren's invocation at the inauguration, and he said he didn't approve of Rick Warren speaking because of the whole gay thing, but he said he didn't find the prayer offensive. I did.
Yeah.
I really did. I could barely stomach it. And when he said there's one God, or, you know, there's one person to worship, basically, is what he was saying. Well, I think a whole lot of people out there were thinking, okay, well, in your world.
Well, did you notice that Obama mentioned non-believers?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's the first time really in any big speech that that's been recognized. So he recognized us, Peter.
There's tens of millions of us that overtly do not believe in a deity having any,
I felt so included.
Yeah. And I think there's tens of millions of other people that, you know, someone would say, do you believe in God? And they go, yeah. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
But what is all this religious stuff doing in our political life?
Thank you. Why is it there?
Obama, when he re-said the oath, because
yes.
the final screw-up by a Bush appointee.
Ah, I like that.
Yeah, gave the words wrong of the oath of office to Barack Obama. Although I think Obama threw him off a little because he kind of
started speaking.
Yeah. But it threw him off. But let's see. The president said he did the second time, did not have his Bible with him, but the oath was binding anyways. Oh, where's your Bible? Oh, gee, I don't have it with me right now. I mean, what is that?
Come on. I agree. And, you know, and then the next morning they show the video of the Obamas going to the
church
prayer service.
Yeah.
You know, why? Why? It's okay if you do that, but this is something that is part of the whole becoming presidential.
Does everybody believe
process.
That all of them are genuinely steeped in the belief that they put forth?
I don't know.
Republicans or Democrats? I mean, we believe it more of the Republicans than we do of the Democrats. We just think, yeah, they're faking it. You know, they do. Hey, by the way, we were talking about Bill Ayers, the man who was the ex-terrorist, in the words of Sarah Palin, who Barack Obama used to pal around with, and that was the only thing they had going for them in terms of trying to win the election. Bill Ayers will be speaking at the University of Michigan, Hatcher Graduate Library, right near the Diag. It's called Room 100, on Monday, tomorrow, January 26th at 7 p.m. It's sponsored by the Shaman Drum Bookstore.
Are you going?
I may, actually. A friend of mine said, why don't you come up and see him? I said, you know, I've interviewed him. Heard him speak. I just read this long interview with him.
You've palled around with him, Pierce.
I've palled around with
Bill
Ayers.
Yeah,
I'll never be president.
Own it.
But, you know, they wrote back and said, come up for the spectacle.
Really?
Yeah, I saw him. Yeah, I mean, people start saying, you know, they point their finger at him.
Now they're going to that level, really.
Yeah, and he's so calm, Bill Ayers is.
Yeah, he's laid back. In fact, when you interviewed him, it was so laid back, it was like,
well, he was driving while he was doing it.
I
was
afraid
he was going to crash. But if you want to, if you didn't get all this, you can go to Shaman Drum, S-H-A-M-A-N, Shaman Drum Bookstore in Ann Arbor. And thank you, Al, for sending us the information about all of this. Also, let's see, there was one more thing. Scientists welcome Obama's words because on issues like stem cell, what else are there? Climate change, sex education, contraceptives, the Bush administration, again, surrendered to the far right wing.
They were the far right wing.
Leading
the way.
Yeah, yeah. And but Bush was really part of that. So, I mean, it's not like he just surrendered to him or something like that.
Ugh.
But worse than that, that repeatedly these ideological right wingers that were in charge of our safety and our health and our lives, suppress the findings of the government's scientific agencies. And they discouraged any pronouncement that conflicted with official right-wing ideology. Mm-hmm. They virtually forced people out that did not go along with the right-wing line on any number of important areas.
They did that, or those people wanted out.
Sure.
Some of them wanted out.
In 2004, more than 60 influential scientists, including 20 Nobel laureates, issued a statement claiming that the Bush administration had systematically distorted scientific fact in the service of policy goals on the environment, health, biomedical research, and nuclear weaponry. Remember, folks, so we are 8 years behind in all of this because of these insane people that had us had their hand around our throat at the behest of this small right-wing minority. Well, now We're back. Because one of the things, did you ever think about this particular, you right-wingers? There's a right-winger here at work who said, I won't even mention the gender, who said on Inauguration Day, we're all watching television here, and I'll see her. She said, it's the end of the world.
You know, there's another right-winger,
yeah,
and I won't mention the sex, who said, when they were watching it, so has he been shot yet?
Oh, my God.
I mean, can you believe we're the mania we're surrounded by?
Well, if you look at any of these right-wing blogs or news sites or the one right-wing television cable network, already it's just...
They're on the attack.
I don't know.
It's not surprising, really.
Yeah, on the other hand, we were on the attack from day one, weren't we? But again, we were on the attack... Jalene and I were in 2001 because the election had been blatantly stolen from the man who had won it.
Yes.
Al Gore.
Yes.
Where's Al Gore?
Al Gore? He was at the festivities.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go back to our phones. 313-298-WRIF.
Oh, 313-298-9743.
Okay, let's take some calls. Here is Nick. Nick's in Bloomfield Hills. Hi, Nick. Thanks for joining us on WRIF. You're on the air.
Thanks for having me. How are you both?
We're good.
Great, Nick.
Good. First, I wanted to thank you guys. You are two of the only people, especially in broadcast, that do not give carte blanche to religion in these matters, and I greatly appreciate that.
Well, good.
Quickly wanted to comment on the sincerity of the religion of politicians. I think Barack Obama is both smart enough to, A, realize that he has to pretend to be religious, and B, not be religious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
In any case, what I really wanted to talk about...
Nick, let me just say one thing, though. Within the African-American community, religion plays a number of very important roles. One of it is ministered to what people think is the necessity for their... spiritual lives, but also it's a social and often political interweaving within.
True.
Certainly in Detroit, certainly in Chicago,
yep.
And everybody was so hard on his minister. How soon we forget? What was the
Jeremiah Wright?
Jeremiah Wright, and I mean this man was not only a religious figure in Chicago, but he's also a very important political figure in that he was influential. Mm-hmm. In the community that he served. And that's certainly true in Detroit with a lot of ministers as well. Nick, go ahead, though.
Okay. Well, anyway, I suppose I just wanted to vent my frustration. You were talking earlier about the executive order that President Obama signed to reverse the policy for the funding for education, you know, involving abortion and whatnot. And I've never heard an anti-abortion argument that was not rooted in religion. And, I mean, to me, the Establishment Clause precludes any of these things from being taken into account in regards to public policy.
Sure, the First Amendment that Congress shall establish no religion, right.
Well, exactly, no laws, you know, establishing or whatever with religion. And so in that light, I feel that it has no place in the public sphere. And for people, and I've heard a lot of people who are just very, very frustrated about this policy. And to me, trying to enforce these religious views upon other people amounts to nothing less than oppression. And I understand that they think it's wrong. However, to try and force it upon other people, I mean, you know, they say it amounts to murder and then it becomes their right to do that. But to me, it amounts to child abuse to teach our children to mold their lives to please some imaginary being in the sky who is judging them based upon their every action.
And, yeah, it's kind of scary to a lot of people. But Nick, I don't know if you heard me earlier, that I said that the religious people I know who are liberal or progressive religious people, what they want to do is create a situation, a social and economic situation where all children are wanted, where birth control is available to whoever wants it, and that there's no one that wants to, there's not a family that wants to abort a child because of economic reasons, which is probably... particularly outside of the United States, one of the main factors in driving women towards abortion, just because of rampant poverty
in
the world.
And they're not able to have birth control. And a lot of times these women are thought of as second-class citizens. So what are they supposed to do, you know?
Yeah. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate your call. And let's see. Here is Lars. Lars is in Madison Heights. Hi, Lars. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there, Richard, I was wondering why you guys didn't bring this up, that the U.S. has already bombed Pakistan under the new administration.
Yeah, now it's Barack Obama's war in Afghanistan.
Oh, Pakistan. Predator drone killed 22 people killed.
Oh, that's right. Pakistan as well. Right. Sure. A fluid border, and we have to kill the militants. So, I mean, and every once in a while, just like Israel, of course, that ratio of civilians to so-called militants was a lot higher in Gaza. What a war crime that was. But what in the world is the United States doing fighting a war in Afghanistan? But, you know, I just interviewed, you may have heard that the other week, and who spoke yesterday, today, Sunday, Greg Mortensen, who wrote Three Cups of Tea about his experiences in trying to start schools in Afghanistan and how horrible the Taliban is, throwing acid in the face of young girls who want to go to school and threatening villagers, executing families that try to send kids to school. So here are our choices, folks. This is what the brainchilds of, not the brainchilds, what would it be, the brainiacs that run this society have presented us with. Either we can continue to fighting this war in Afghanistan and now in Pakistan, as Lars correctly says, committing more and more troops, we'll have more and more Afghan civilian deaths and more American armed forces deaths, or we can give the country over to the Taliban. Which would you rather have? And that stupefies the mind. I mean, of course, we would rather have neither. But this is a policy that goes back to the end of the Carter administration and into the Reagan administration. And I don't want to go on a whole historical account of all of that. Maybe Charlie Wilson's War, the movie, would be...
I've never seen that.
...an easy place to start. But that's what Bush and the others have left us with. We're damned if we do, and we're damned if we don't. And what the hell is Barack Obama going to do? I don't know. Thank you, Lars. Thanks for bringing that up. You're absolutely right. Here is Jimmy. Jimmy's in Bridgewater. He called 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Good. Hey,
great show.
Thank you.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
Do you know what constitutional amendment abortion is based on?
Yes. The what is the Fourth Amendment, is it?
No, it's the 14th.
I'm sorry. I needed another one on there. That's all. I needed a one. Yeah.
Do you know why?
It remind us. And wait a minute. If I had all my faculties, why don't I have all my faculties now? But it is. Congress shall make no. Tell me.
Well, no. It doesn't about Congress shall make no law.
No.
If you read Roe versus Wade, which I have, and this is how I found this out, is the court said that. That the woman nor the fetus has any standing in the Constitution because the 14th Amendment defines a person under the Constitution as a 21-year-old male. It's right there in Section 2, 14th Amendment. It says specifically, here, I got it right in front of me, being 21 years of age and citizens of the United States, male citizens. That is why it has to do with that. That is why they did that. Now, personally, I don't want to see Roe v. Wade go away. I want to see the 14th Amendment go away, but I don't want to see.
The 14th. You know, I used to all during the Bush administration. I had the Constitution and the amendments here, but I've been leaving it at home, figuring they're not necessary. The 14th Amendment, was that one of the anti-slavery?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. The 13th Amendment is anti-slavery.
Yeah.
The 14th Amendment makes us all subjects of the federal government. You are no longer a state citizen. You are a federal citizen.
I think the 14th Amendment is was first intended to secure the rights of former slaves.
Yeah.
No, the 13th Amendment
outlawed slavery. But the 13th and the 14th, I don't want to get into this huge historical debate.
The 14th was
but both of them were post-Civil War amendments,
yeah,
right?
It's about citizenship.
Yeah. And Jimmy is saying that what happened is that that the state citizenship was removed and now we're all federal citizens, which is on the step, one step more to one world government, right, Jimmy?
No.
It says right here, it has been the basis of much important and controversial cases like Roe v. Wade.
Oh, okay.
No, and that's what it did. And what we need to do to, if you know, if these Christians, so-called Christian, and I'm a Christian, by the way, but I am, you know, believe me, Steve, most of these people are so-called. Don't lump me in with Bush.
Go.
He's not a Christian.
Okay.
But what we need to do is we need to repeal the 14th Amendment completely and change the language of the 13th Amendment to include all people. And then you don't need your ERA. All the women will be...
There isn't an ERA.
No, he said you wouldn't need it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you wouldn't need that.
Yeah, that would have...
Just change the language.
That would be inclusive.
Oh, I see. Include women and we're cool, right.
No, you just include... You just say all people.
Yeah.
Something would be nice, because I really do feel... sometimes like a second class citizen.
Jimmy, I got to get these spots in before midnight. Thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate it. Boy, all of a sudden, all that went right out of my brain. Thank you, Jalene Jordan. Peter Werby here with you as well. 313-298-WRIF. Hold on. And our second hour is arriving.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
101 WRIF and Tanya Pepsi Max want to bring the maximum Super Bowl bounce to your pad. Keep your radio locked in the Rift to score a commemorative Super Bowl 43 football. The lucky Rift winner will score the grand prize. A WRIF party at your place with a big game, including food, lots of ICO Pepsi Max, a 42-inch flat-screen TV with surround sound, and PlayStation 3 with Madden 2009 for you to keep. It's the maximum Super Bowl bash.
Listen and win.
Tanya Pepsi Max. Maximum taste. Maximum energy. Zero calories and 101 WRIF.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing, and we want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new MKS, the MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. You can check out our vehicle inventory on the site, and you can bet that if you don't see what you're looking for, we can surely find it for you. Experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com. That's DEMMER.com.
Experience the Demmer difference. Right now at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury, lease a 2009 Lincoln MKS for $379 a month. Based on an AZ plan with Ford Lincoln Mercury lease renewal and $1,969 down plus tax. See dealer for details or check them out on the web at Demmer.com.
Attention. Hydralyze is currently seeking participants with dark circles and puffy eyes. If you have dark circles or bags around your eyes due to heredity, fatigue, or aging, you are now eligible to try Hydralyze free. Hydralyze was introduced to improve delicate skin around the eyes and now has been shown to eliminate dark circles and bags. It effectively diminishes even dark circles caused by heredity. To participate in the Hydralyze trial and see results risk-free, call 1-800-505-7931. Fragile capillaries around the eye can leak, allowing blood to pool beneath the skin like an ugly bruise. But right now, you can join the thousands of people who have seen their dark circles fade away, watched as bags literally disappear from view. Participate in the free trial by calling today. If you're serious about getting rid of your dark circles or bags around the eyes, you are eligible to participate and experience a free trial of Hydralyze. For your free trial, call this number today, 1-800-505-7931, 1-800-505-7931.
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-493-8159. Now you have qualified help in dealing with the IRS. This is the second chance you never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. Call right now for your second chance. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
Is your credit score holding you back? Are you paying more for everything just because you don't have perfect credit?
Well, it's not your fault. Credit card companies are doing everything they can to keep you in debt and never let you escape. But I've got a system that can fix your credit score once and for all. And I'm going to send you a free tape showing you the power of my proven system today.
My credit score is now 758. My wife and I are shouting for joy right now.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My system doesn't just fix your credit score, it will permanently rebuild your credit status so it can never come back to haunt you again. It works no matter how bad your credit is or how much debt you have.
Our credit score was in the low 600s and now we're at 780.
You can wipe the slate clean once and for all. Call right now and I'll wish you my free tape. For your free tape, call 1-800-337-1713. That's 1-800-337-1713. 1-800-337-1713.
101.1 WRIF. WRIF HD1 Detroit.
You're listening to Nicole, the Riff's award-winning talk show on 101 WRIF.
All right, we're back with our second hour. Peter Werby, Jillian Jordan, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And call talkyes at yahoo.com. And I don't know if if you're listening online, you don't hear the ads, I don't think. But if you're, most of you are listening on the radio, and that last ad for the National Guard, this in the... January 19th, New York Times, more Americans joining military as jobs dwindle. Well, hey,
oh, yeah.
As the number of jobs across the nation dwindles, more Americans are joining the military, lured by a steady paycheck, benefits, and training. The last fiscal year was a banner one for the military, with all active duty and reserve forces meeting or exceeding their recruitment goals for the first time since 2004, the year that violence in Iraq intensified drastically. Wow.
Yeah.
Do I have that handy? I'm always quoting the New York Times. They just got bought out by Senor Slim. Did I send them that?
Oh, yeah. This rich guy who, a Mexican businessman, right?
He's the second richest man in the world. Some people say he is, in fact, the richest man in the world. Richer than Bill Gates.
And I've never heard about him before.
Carlos Slim, S-L-I-M. Looks like Slim, but it's actually obviously Spanish, so it's Slim.
Slim.
So he just pulled $250 million, $250 million out of his pocket and bought up a little bit of the New York Times.
Wow.
And people are probably saying, why a Mexican businessman buying to this prestigious, what they call the old gray lady? That's what they call the New York Times.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, all newspapers are having lots of problems. But what about Rupert Murdoch, who owns the News Corporation? Owns all those newspapers and Fox News. He's from Australia. He may be naturalized citizen by now. A Swiss lawyer is working on behalf of the Iraqi journalists who threw shoes at Bush, and says his client will seek political asylum in Switzerland. That is, if he can ever get out of Iraq with his life. Right?
Well, good luck. I mean, wow. Although I love the shoe throwing. This guy does. I don't know. Once you're in an Iraqi jail. Ugh.
Yeah. I keep forgetting to look for those shoes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. They're very lightweight. What did they weigh? What was it?
10 ounces for two? Wow.
Per shoe.
You can trip the light fantastic, whatever the hell that means.
Hey, you know what? Even my Republican father thought that was funny.
Well, not that he threw the shoes?
He thought it was.
He ducked?
He thought it was so funny.
How many times have you seen that?
Oh, so many.
Man,
yeah.
That's absolutely amazing.
I just saw a shot of it earlier, like a still, and you can see him just kind of crouched down in the shoe right above.
Right. Another wonderful Republican president, Richard M. Nixon, a film out about him that we saw last night, Frost Nixon, David Frost.
Oh, yeah, I would like to see that.
I forgot the year, 1976, I think it actually occurred.
Oh.
And Frank Langella, if he doesn't get Best Actor, wow.
Tonight, when he really resembles him, I've seen the photos.
You know what? I thought that's the way Nixon looked. And then I went home and looked at the YouTube of the actual David Frost, Richard
doesn't
Nixon.
Doesn't look like it at all.
Doesn't look like it at all. And the real Richard M. Nixon looked much scarier.
Oh, yeah. One of my dad's most prized possessions, speaking of my Republican father, who I love dearly, one of the few Republicans that I do love dearly, he has a signed Richard Nixon book.
Really?
He does.
Wow.
And I guess it's worth a whole ton of money.
Yeah. Did he have to pay for it?
No. He bought this... home, and with the home, he got the library. It was the former governor of my home state. It was his home.
Your dad's home?
My dad bought the former governor's home. And in it, the library came with it, and in it, he found this signed Nixon book.
Well, that's amazing.
I know.
One of the things we'd all like to know, how the hell did we get in this financial mess? Well, at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, Dean Baker, who's written Plunder and Blunder, The Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economy, will explain the growth and collapse of the stock and housing bubbles. What has happened? And he actually has some good ideas for what should occur.
Okay. And we'll take anything at this point.
Yeah. And remember, you know, I got a very sad letter from a friend of mine who can't find work and is having some, and just he described himself in very, very negative terms.
Oh, that's so sad.
And I wrote him back and I said, hey, this is a mass phenomenon. You know, this is not of your doing.
Yeah, a lot of people who are in your position.
Yeah,
as well,
exactly. And it's all the swells, all the real rich guys that put this all together and for their benefit, and then it all collapsed. And you didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
But we're...
You're not a loser.
Yeah. And we're the ones, I mean, not me yet, that are suffering the consequences.
You know, my friend's mom always says, you know, it's only money. And I agree, but there is... You need to have certain things. You need to be able to pay so you can live, so you can eat, so you can have heat and lights and... You know, the basics, really, it's tough to even cover the basics for most people anymore. 70% of the population in the United States is struggling.
Wow. And at 1:30, two friends of mine, Charles and Sandra Simmons, they're the directors of Detroit's Hush House. It's a community museum and leadership training institute for human rights, and it's right sock in the middle of one of the poorest ghettos in Detroit. And they live in this house. They're both middle-class professionals. He's a professor at Eastern Michigan University. She teaches at Wayne State University.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they're so committed to this neighborhood, to the people there, and the story is quite heartening.
Oh, sure is.
People, I mean, talk about thinking globally and acting locally. Charles and Sandra Simmons are really doing it. They just won this award, too, from Wayne State University for their activities at Detroit's Hush House.
Very anyway, nice.
That's at 1:30. Let's take some people, and let's get, here's Ken in Canada. Ken's been waiting a long time. Ken, sorry to keep you waiting so long, but thank you for making our show international. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Jolene.
Hi, Ken.
Nice name. That's my daughter's name.
Really?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I'm a North American native.
Uh-huh.
I have dual citizenship. I just live right across the pond from you. I've contributed to your community. I done my time learning the School of Hard Knocks in the city of Detroit.
Okay.
I spent some time at Teen Challenge rehabilitating my life from a former addict.
Good for you.
And carried out some fulfilling jobs around the city in Southfield and whatnot, and contributed to society.
Terrific.
Now, the point I have is I was listening to the inauguration speeches on the 20th, and being North American, I'm Canadian and American, I'm non-biased.
Okay.
Okay, the thing is, I heard the bishop talking about when the red man gets a head man,
right,
he went on with a few other racial
terms.
Comments, terms, and then he went on to say when the white chooses right, and I thought that was a little haughty and a little bit maybe over the top, you know, gloating about the position they just won. Now, okay, if this is a land of opportunity. And the minority elect president or president now is vying for equal opportunity in the land. When is Parliament or Congress gonna give the Native North American a position of decision making or power?
Probably never, I would say, Ken, in both cases, although at least in Canada, there's that whole area in which were the Northwest Territory that now is reverted back to Native control, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but don't ever look for that here. You got to remember, I mean, I don't know why I would say this to you. Other people listening should remember that during, you know, for the last 500 years, there's been this movement out of Europe and the establishment of these white settler colonial states. And Canada, the United States, Israel, South Africa, New Zealand, Australia primarily. And it depends on the sort of historical circumstances. Mostly that the native population in the area that's now the United States and a lot of Canada, that the indigenous people were just, their lands were stolen. I mean, that's one of the conditions of it. The Europeans come and they steal the land of the indigenous people. If you don't get rid of them almost completely, like we have in the United States, or they have in Australia for sure, and pretty much New Zealand, if you let them remain like they have, the people whose land you've stolen, like in Israel and in South Africa, well, then you got trouble. But here, it would just almost be out of the goodness of the the hearts of people to give some sort of symbolic recognition, as is done from time to time. But Ken, in terms of any realistic recognition of theft of land, don't look for it.
No, I'm not. Not looking for any any kind of miracles on recompense or nothing like that. I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of educated North American Indians, like, in positions of the medical field and the legal field, and you know.
Well, I think there's a recognition of people that have achieved that, and you know, and well, we should. We owe a lot, I think. Because of history, which at least now has finally, when it doesn't matter. I mean, all the myths about being, no, you know, that the land being uninhabited or the people that inhabited it were savages and all of that. That's when the myths of European white supremacy prevailed. And now, essentially, we have all the land. Now we recognize what was done to them. Well, way too late. All right, Ken, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Here's Jennifer up in Flint. Jennifer, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi, I just wanted to comment about Obama and him all of a sudden going to church and all.
Yeah?
I mean, it's funny because I don't know what it was. You have to forgive me, but when you were talking about, what is the word? Political opportunism?
Yeah, was it political opportunism on all of these, part of all these? Yeah, I mean, I guess I suspect that all of their religion is power.
But I understand that, but I believe all politicians have some sort of political opportunism. But he's not religious, now he is. There's these Florida gays, now he's not, which is actually interesting. Because my nephew's emailed something to me the other day. He found a published document from the Windy City Times.
Uh-huh.
And it was a document that Obama signed that fully supported the gay marriage movement.
Really?
And he was 40. This was in 1996, it says. But all of a sudden now he's not for it. And he's with that...
Well, it is, you know, as you're indicating, which, you know, politicians feel they have to do certain things in order to be elected. I'm trying to think if there are any atheist Congress people. I think there may be a couple.
I think there might be, yeah.
Yeah, I could probably find out at the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at
FFRF.org.
FFRF.org. Sounds like I'm barking. All right, thanks for calling from way up there in Flint, Jennifer. Appreciate your call. Here, let's see. Let's take these kind of in order. Here's Eric in Ypsilanti. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter and Julian.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
How's it going?
I'm good. How about you guys?
Good.
Excellent.
If I got something to say, if these right-wing politicians and their support want to get rid of abortion, they should adopt pro-abortion legislation.
Tell me, explain that one. I'm missing the logic of that.
I mean, like, I'm talking about when Barack Obama, like, got rid of the restrictions of abortion that George Bush on.
The ones on funding foreign
Planned
Parenthood groups and what have you. Family planning groups, not Planned Parenthood. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And the right-wing politician, his name that I heard last week talking about how bad abortion is, was a congressman from Arizona.
Uh-huh.
Congressman Trent Franks.
Oh, yeah. He was also, he gave this glowing appreciation of George W. Bush in the House as well.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like I had to change the channel. I was watching C-SPAN the other day.
Yeah, it would be hard to watch.
Yes.
Well, somebody's got to represent that small minority, that 22%. I mean, having been in the minority with political opinions before in the past, I have some appreciation of the position that puts you in. But I knew, I mean, it was the, we used to quote this all the time, you know, the Lincoln dictum about being able to fool all the people some of the time. And that happened right after 9/11, but after 9/11 with Bush. But, you know, we were confident. Jolene and I were doing a show together at the time. 5 days a week, that the people couldn't be fooled, all the people couldn't be fooled all the time.
Yeah, we knew there'd be fallout. Looks like Representative Fortney Pete Stark, a Democrat of California, is the first openly non-theistic member of Congress.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it.
And there was another one, too.
Where was, what area is he from, or what does it say, what district? Probably I wouldn't.
It doesn't say on this particular document.
Aren't computers great?
They're wonderful. Yeah. Oh, I spelled atheist wrong. That's terrible.
It doesn't matter. You still get it, right?
Yeah, I still
Jermaine,
got it.
Yeah. 313-298-WRIF. We're being Jolene. Here's Tim in Lincoln Park. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Pete. Jolene, how are you doing tonight?
Hi.
Hey.
I want to talk about the Fourth Amendment, the 13th Amendment, and the 14th Amendment.
Wow, go ahead.
Okay,
the 13th Amendment bans involuntary servitude or slavery within the United States.
Right.
And that came after the Civil War. The 14th Amendment has to do with what's called the Process or Equal Protection Clause. That means that every U.S. citizen under the law, and, you know, it's not just males, whoever made that comment earlier, it's females as well and children. All the laws apply to all the citizens of the United States. So it's simply called the Due Process Clause.
Right. That's where due process comes from, the 14th Amendment?
The 14th Amendment. You can Google that and find out.
Okay.
The Constitution and at home or something. Anyway, the whole abortion thing actually comes out of the Roe v. Wade decision, comes out of something called the Griswold decision in 61. The Griswold decision established something called privacy. The specific case had to do with contraception, whether a woman had a right to use contraception, and the argument was made for privacy. The court ruled in favor of Griswold, and the Roe v. Wade decision is based on Griswold.
And Griswold, the contraception case, there were state laws banning the distribution of contraceptives.
That's right, and that's all a privacy issue. So whenever anyone is pro-choice, they should cite the Fourth Amendment as their basis for being pro-choice.
The Fourth Amendment?
The Fourth Amendment, yes.
I was right then.
Peter, you win.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because there's a lot of debate among some people. I mean, the whole thing about, you know, what a person is. And there's no definition of fetus as a person in any sort of constitutional law.
No, there's not.
Right.
And, well, but they're rooted in English and American jurisprudence is that that you achieve humanhood when you exit the womb and live independently.
Viability,
yeah, exactly. Mm. And I suppose people are welcome to try to agitate differently. I mean, they do. They have the arrogance. They have the arrogance to compare themselves with the anti-slavery movement of the 1830s and 1840s. Yeah. But, you know, here slaves were not considered human beings, but chattel property, and...
That was written in the Constitution, actually, three-fifths of human beings.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's right.
To stop it, you know.
And the Constitution also permitted the slave trade, I think, to like 1803.
1808, yeah.
My little Republican nephew, who's 15, wrote on Facebook, his status was, "What is history?" I thought, I just wanted to reach through the computer and strangle him. You know, and I wanted to write. I wanted to say, well, history is when someone who was once considered three-fifths of a person is actually the leader of our country. There you go, boy.
All right, Tim, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. You know what we never have talked about, this post-inaugural, now the Obama era, is the impact that this has had on people all over the world.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole world is looking at us in a much lighter, you know, way.
How can the man... stand pressure. I mean, they expect him to find a cure for cancer.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, by allowing stem cell research, guess what? He just
could.
May.
Something that Bush was against.
Absolutely.
All those Republicans.
Such a hater.
But, you know, here is what I think is going on. I think Obama, in, you know, come talk to me in a year or something like that. And, yeah. Or my friends will say, you actually said you thought that a politician had genuine sentiments in terms of what he says about people. And
yeah.
I actually do. Whether he can actually alter the, I don't know, the
worldview,
the institutionalized nature of power and imperial overreach and all of that is yet to be seen.
Well, I like transparency, as they keep saying, you know. And, you know, I was broadcasting live at the
auto show
today, and this guy said, you're going to be on the air with Werby Tite? I said, yeah. Yeah, I didn't even know how he knew who I was, but I guess he put it all together, right?
Yeah.
So I said, yeah. And he goes, hey, how long is it going to be before he starts bashing Obama?
Well, not yet. Not well, I mean.
Far so good.
Yeah, if we're not for continuing these wars, we'll bash him. Although, what says he's going to start moving out of Iraq? 16
yes.
months. A lot of people, a lot more people are going to be killed between now and then. And billions and billions of more money that we don't have is going to be wasted there, thanks to George W. Bush. But no, here's what I was saying. I think I said this a while ago. Barack Obama represents all the impulses and aspirations of hundreds of millions of people here and around the world. That's why people are celebrating all around the world. I mean, partly it's this visceral hatred for George W. Bush and everything he represented. All the, you know, the small, narrow, intolerant, negative, incompetent, corrupt, criminal, regime that he ran for 8 years. Yeah. Barack Obama does not necessarily embody all that. I mean, people look at Barack Obama and they think, you know, tolerance, security, economic and social justice, peace.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say tolerance? I think that love, even love.
Yes.
And it's impossible for one man to create that in the world, but desire throughout the world is there for all that. We've just had enough of what we've experienced, all the violence, all the corruption, all the poverty, none of which has to continue. But there is this small group of men, mostly probably about 99% men, that have these grand plans based on insanity, based on greed, based on desire for power, based on ideology, based on religion. That, and they're a small minority of the world's population. What do most of us want? We just want all of those things. You know, we can tolerate anything, even things we don't like.
We have.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we say, okay, that's not my thing, but as long as they don't bother me, that's the key. Don't bother other people.
Mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned this a long time ago. I saw this feminist manifesto one time, and it said most of the problems would be solved if men agreed never to touch another human being without permission.
Wow, that's strong. Hey.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know if that takes into account all the economic stuff, but
I'm going to let you do all the man bashing.
Okay. That's all right. 313-298-WRIF. Let's see. Here is Jack in Utica. Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Good.
I have three questions for you, Peter.
Oh, wow.
Number one, what is the difference between the American Indian and Taliban in Afghanistan in accordance with the treatment of their women?
Huh?
Number two, what if the United States government decided right now to call it a national debt? They got fed up. They called it a national debt. I think it's somewhere around 200, 250 grand owed by every family.
Right.
Or 50 or 60,000 owed by every individual. And they decided to launch a retrieval of our property, our bank accounts, and they used the Chinese military to come in and do it, not the American military.
Right.
And number three, what if the world got fed up with a manifest destiny a while ago, you know, how we have the right to expand and do whatever we want to people outside of a country?
Right.
What if the world decided to get launch a massive invasion? The entire world, 6 billion, 6.5 billion people, every country in the world decided to come in and just invade America and beat the living hell out of us.
Well, we'd probably blow them all away, given the fact that what we spend on a military, Jack, is more than every major army combined. But let me take those as what we call, and I don't say this disparagingly, rhetorical questions.